Right, okay, we are, it's Parshat Korach this week, and Parshat Korach is before the day Gimel Tammuz, the third of Tammuz, which is the yahrzeit of the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, who passed away in 1994. However, since 1927, the third of Tammuz has been a significant date in the Chabad calendar. You know, there's this theory of movements, you know, the way in which movements achieve a sense of identity, you know, is by having a calendar, you know, that there are special days and special events, and Tnuat HaChassidut, you know, the Hasidic movement, you know, so the Hasidic movement, and particularly the Chabad branch of it, which was very much into seeing Hasidism as a movement and seeing itself as a movement. So therefore there's a Rosh Hashanah of Hasidism on the 19th of Kislev, and there are various other special days and dates, and the 3rd of Tammuz relates together with the 12th of Tammuz. It all has to do with Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, who was arrested. Now, a couple of weeks ago, the discourse that we explored was one which was said on the day he was arrested, the 15th of Sivan. And he was arrested because he was trying to strengthen Judaism in communist Russia. And so the communists arrested him, and they condemned him to death. And in what is seen as a miraculous chain of events, in the end he was released on the 3rd of Tammuz, except that that was releasing him from prison but sending him to exile. And then on the 12th of Tammuz he was released completely, but he had to leave Russia. And that was when he left Russia. First of all, he went to Riga, to Latvia. Then he visited the United States, traveled.
Why did they release him? What was the reason?
There was international pressure. But I haven't heard the full story of it. No one has yet, that I've seen, written a full account of exactly what happened. There was particularly pressure from Hasidim, or, you know, proto-Hasidim, as it were, in America, who were probably descendants of Chabad families and who were very concerned at this thing that Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak had been arrested, and they tried to get him released, and their efforts together with I've never seen a full account written up. Someone did write a book about the way that Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak escaped from Europe and in 1940, and was able to come to America. So someone wrote a book about that. How he got out of prison in 1927, I don't know. But from the Chabad Hasidic point of view, there's no problem. It was a miracle. Of course, for historians, miracles also need to be documented. There's this aspect of the miracle, that aspect. So that's the special thing about the third of Tammuz. And this discourse was said, Shabbat Parshat Korach, the third of Tammuz, 1958. So that's the theme. The theme of the discourse is a mixture. It relates to Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak going free from prison, that miraculous dimension, the actual fact of it being a miracle, if we get there, that's in the last paragraph. And the Sedra Korach, the whole idea of Korach, and a discourse that Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak said when he was freed. He said a discourse. And that discourse begins, now on the first page, you've got a few lines. It's actually of the Book of Psalms, of Tehillim, and this is Tehillim chapter 66. And you can see the second verse there, verse 9. Hasam nafshenu b'chayim. He puts our soul in life. V'lo natan lamot ragleinu. He does not yet let our feet stumble. If you look at this in the context, Baruch Hu Amim Elokeinu, blessed, O peoples, bless God, v'hashmi'a kol tiloto, and make known the sound of his praise, because he's put our soul in life, he hasn't let our feet stumble. God has tested us, like silver is tested. He's brought us into a trap, and all kinds of difficulty for our loins. However, and he made people ride over our neck. We've gone into fire and water, but he's taken us out into abundance. You know, it's a beautiful part of Tehillim, as many parts of Tehillim, all parts of Tehillim are. The Book of Psalms, very powerful aspect. And then, of course, there is the actual Seder of the week. Now, you've got this section over here because we're going to come to this. We're going to explore this briefly in a minute. But just the beginning of the Seder, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi, it is all about Korach, the son of Yitzhar, began a rebellion. And he rebelled against Moshe and Aaron particularly. So that's the theme of the Seder of the week. And the thing about Vayikach Korach, if you turn back to the first page, there you have the Hebrew Vayikach Korach, and you also have the Aramaic translation. Now, the Aramaic translation is very interesting here. What's the Aramaic translation? Can you read it? Yes. Be'it Peleg. Be'it Peleg Korach. Korach divided. It's in the small print over there. Onkelos. That's the translation of Onkelos. Korach divided. See, it's difficult to understand exactly what it means, Vayikach, he took. The word taking in Hebrew, does have a variety of uses. But it's an interesting question exactly how it fits in over here with the idea of Korach beginning a rebellion. What did he take? Does it say what he took? In the verse, it just says he took. So this non-transitive verb, he divided. He caused the division, might be a way of translating it. Okay, now, of course, if he caused the division, that must fit into some kind of Kabbalistic way of looking at the whole schema of existence, the Sefirot, the worlds, you know. So. All right, so hopefully that's what we will encounter on our little journey with this beautiful discourse of 1958, which is Mugah. It's edited, it was published by the Rebbe in 1989 with the it was called the Tract for the Third of Tammuz, Kuntres Gimel Tammuz. Oh yo yo ya 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 yo yo ha ya na ya na yo mambo ha yo ma ya ya ma yo mambo ha ya na ramba yo yo mambo ba yo ya ya na ramba ya ma yo ho ya na ramba ya ya yo ma ya na ramba ya ya na ramba yo Yamba Yelamba Yamba Yamba Yelamba Yamba Yamba Hasam Nafshenu Bachaim, he puts our soul in life. Velona Tamla Motrag Leinu, and he doesn't let our feet stumble. Umavaya Kvot Kdushot Mori Bachomi Admor. The previous Reverend explains. In the discourse which he said, beginning with these words, which he said on the day of the 12th of Tammuz, which was and the beginning of that redemption from prison was on the 3rd of Tammuz. So in other words, the way he celebrated going out of this whole terrible epoch of being arrested and condemned to death and so on, which wasn't just him. It had to do with all the people who he was. The reason why he was arrested was because he was sending Hasidim to different parts of Russia in order to strengthen Judaism in the face of the Bolshevik attempt to destroy Judaism. And this was the this was the threat, and in a way, see the way he sees it, he saw it, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak. It's not just the local issue of communism at that particular point. It's as if it was the whole process of modernity, which was threatening to destroy Judaism. There's a sense in which Russian communism was the it was another stage in the process of rationalization, which comes from the Enlightenment. That there is no room for spiritual religious behavior, so it doesn't fit into the modern world, and so therefore, you know, whether it takes this form or that form, and so this process of rationalization, of secularization, you know, dialectic materialism, that's you know, a completely materialistic view of life, that there's nothing beyond what we are able to see, and so that was really the challenge that was being faced. And so for him, the fact that he was released by the communists, by the Russian government, and was therefore able to continue his work of strengthening Judaism. He continued to work on behalf of the Jews of Russia. Although he left Russia, he went to Latvia and then to Poland, and he spent 10 years in Poland. And while he was there, he worked very hard on behalf of the Jews of Russia, trying to encourage them in their Judaism, trying to send them religious requisites, and trying to galvanize support among the Polish Jews for the Jews of Russia. But he saw his release as something which applied to every Jew. He said it applies to Kol Asher B'Shem Yehudi Yechaneh, B'Shem Yisrael Yechaneh, anyone who's called a Jew in any way. Because he saw this as really the a spiritual victory over the secularizing force of modernity. That's how I think one could...
What year are we talking about?
1927. So obviously there were many challenges to come, including the war, the Holocaust, and the aftermath. But this was the way he saw this particular release. Now, so the way he celebrated that release was by saying a discourse, and the discourse began with the same words as this discourse, and he explains there the hachayim shebehem sam nafshenu, the life in which God puts our soul. Heim chayim na'alim, they are yoter, they're a very exalted kind of life. More exalted mechay nefesh mitzad atzma than the life of the soul in itself. In other words, there's some kind of input that God gives to the soul. The soul obviously is life. The soul is an expression of life, and you can go to deeper dimensions of the soul till you come to etzem achayut, the essence of the life of the soul. But there is an even higher dimension of life, some kind of transcendent quality of life, which is somehow flows to the soul. The divine God brings this life to the soul, and that has an extra transformative power. The chaya hanefesh, because the life of the soul in themselves, he mugbalim, they're limited. Because even though the soul in itself is the very essence of life, and it's higher, the essential life of the soul is higher than the flow of life which gives life to the body. Not only of the particular life, but even general life. It's as if you've got the person, and then you've got different kinds of life. So there's a kind of life which like flows through the person's body, and then you have a sort of a more general like aura of life around the person, which is the chayut haklali, and then you've got the chay be'etzem of the soul, the chay be'etzem, the essential life, and then you've got this higher level of life, which is something even greater, which is somehow extended to the soul, and in that way enables the soul to stand firm. You're looking with rather worried expression.
I'm just thinking you're kind of Picasso there. It's quite impressed, really.
So that's the this is the life which enables the soul, the person, to stand without stumbling. So here we have the living in the paradoxes of existence and having some kind of divine input which enables us to stand without stumbling. And so therefore, so there is this higher level, because so it's high even in the Chai Be'etzem. The Chai Be'etzem, the essential life of the soul, even though that is higher than the Chayut Prati, the individual flow of life force, and the general flow, this kind of aura, the general flow. Nonetheless, given the Zesh HaNefesh Chay Be'etzem, Upneisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hitviya BaNefesh Teva Zeh. The reason why the soul is essentially life is because God has planted as nature this quality in the soul that it should be the essence of life. And therefore, now here's a very interesting step. Since it's nature, it's bahagbala, it's limited. There's the idea of the given, even if it's godly given, and even if it's something intensely profound, the fact that it's given as the tmidim kasidram, the normal structure of life, makes it in some way part of nature, and part of nature means that in some sense it's limited. And the contrast with that is the miraculous, which is beyond nature, that there's some kind of step beyond nature. At the very end of the discourse, this links it together with the whole idea of the 12th of Tammuz, something which is miraculous. He doesn't go into the details of what happened on the 12th of Tammuz during the body of the discourse. It's just the link that we're reaching something which is nature, and then that which is beyond nature. And it's the step beyond nature. So even this, the idea of Chai Be'etzem, is still part of nature, and then we have beyond nature, and that level beyond. Remembering, of course, I wonder if Laddie takes personally these references to nature. Joe Burke's dog responds whenever the animal soul is mentioned.
What man?
It sort of perks up. It?
Yes.
The animal. So. So you see the word nature, as you know, hateva, has the same numerical value as the word Elohim, which is a name for God, which is seen as concealing. It's in the plural. It's whereas the singular yudke vavke, the tetragrammaton, is beyond nature. So in other words, even this level, which seems very exalted in relation to the person, is chai be'etzem, the essence of life. Now that is nature, and therefore it's limited. V'ha'chaim shebehem sam nafshenu, but the life in which God puts our soul, which has got this extra quality, heim lamayim ateva, they are above life. It is above life. life in Hebrew is plural. It's an interesting concept. Chaim is plural, and so it refers to them. Heim, they life. But this quality of life is above nature. That's what it means. He puts our soul in life. He puts our soul in life, and doesn't let our feet stumble. Shahakoach al ze, the power for this, shachagleinu lo yelamot, that our feet shouldn't stumble. Hu dafka ma'achaim shalamayim ateva, comes specifically from life above nature. All right. So that's a concept of life above nature, which gives a kind of a firmness, some kind of quality which the soul links with, which gives it a firmness that it doesn't stumble in the difficult passages of life. Bet. Ulahavin atamal zeh. Now to understand the reason for this. Shemitzad chaya nefesh atzma. That as far as the life of the soul itself is concerned, gam mitzad b'chinat chai be'etzem, even when we consider its essential life quality, efshal liyot lamot chagleinu, it's possible that its feet could stumble. V'hakoach al zeh, he's summarizing, the power that our feet shouldn't stumble is dafka from the life which is above nature. And also to understand the connection of this topic to the geula of the 12th of Tammuz. So in order to understand that, which the link is going to come at the end, if we get that, Mashiach might come first. The question will be whether we'll manage to finish the discourse on the way to the land of Israel or not. Maybe we'll... So, however, in order to understand that, Yesh lahagdim ma shekatub b'reish pashatenu, we should first consider what it says at the beginning of our Sedra of the week, Vayikach Korach. Korach took. Well, the way that the Living Torah translates it, as we saw, he just writes Korach rebelled. He doesn't worry about the word took. But V'tagim Unkelus translates V'itpeleg Korach. Korach divided. D'vachama mekomot shenema v'yikach. In many places in the Targum, when there's the word Vayikach in Hebrew, he gives the normal Aramaic translation for and he took, which is unesiv. Nesiv is to take in Aramaic. V'chan tigim v'itpeleg. But here he says he divided. V'ita b'sefer Noam Elimelech, and it says in the book Noam Elimelech, which is a book by a famous Hasidic leader called Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk. He was one of the colleagues of Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi. Rabbi Shneur Zalman was the founder of Chabad, and Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk, from him come many of the Polish groups of Hasidim, that they come through Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk, from him comes the Maggid of Koshnitz, and then there's a whole variety of Hasidic groups that branch out from there. And in his book, Noam Elimelech, he writes, V'itpeleg Korach, that when it says that Korach divided, Hu al derech rekia hamavdil b'mayim l'mayim, it's like the firmament which divides between the upper waters and the lower waters. So the idea of Korach dividing is something cosmic, and it is the division between the upper waters representing spirituality and the lower waters representing worldliness, and Korach is dividing between them. Umavaya Hatzemach Tzedek, and the Chabad leader in the middle of the 19th century, Reb Menachem Mendel, known as the Tzemach Tzedek, that's the name of the books that he wrote, which were published posthumously, and now we call him by that name. The Perush there, that this explanation, that the division is like the firmament dividing, Hu al pimadi ita b'zohar, that relates to a passage in the Zohar. D'rakia hamavdil hu machloket smola b'yamina. Now, in the Zohar it says that the idea of the firmament dividing between the upper water and the lower water is like a conflict the conflict between left and right. So we're here dealing with deep dimensions, as you know, in Kabbalistic thought. Left is the realm of severity. Right is the realm of chesed, of kindness. And in a way, these are the two fundamental factors in existence. And the conflict between them, in many ways, is the narrative. It's the dealing with the conflict, suffering from the conflict, resolving the conflict, is the narrative of existence. And so here we have this idea. And he goes on to say, "Kegavne do machloket Korach va'Aaron." And similarly is the dispute of Korach and Aaron. So in other words, it's not just some minor dispute. I mean, it seems quite a major thing in the Torah, but the reason why it's a major thing in the Torah, you might say, is, well, they're rebelling against the authority of Moses. That's a terrible thing. Moses has brought them out of Egypt and gave them the Torah and so on. And now they're rebelling against Moses' authority. So, you know, this sounds very fundamental. But this perspective is presenting it in much broader terms. There's really something cosmic taking place. From this we can understand.
So isn't the machloket between Korach and Aaron here?
Yeah.
But it's not Moses.
Well, Moses and Aaron are on the same side in this case. You see, that's an interesting point. You see, one way of understanding the conflict, in just very simplistic terms, the way that Rashi presents it, is that Moses' brother Aaron, Moses is Moses, who brought the Jews out of Egypt. He has made his own brother the high priest. Korach is a cousin. Why doesn't he have some role? Why is Moses making his own brother the high priest? And then he made another person the leader of the Kahatim. And Elitzaphan, Ben Uziel. See, Kahat is the father of Amram and the father of Uziel. And also is the grandfather of Korach. So in other words, it's a group of cousins, and certain ones of them have been given. See, Korach is the son of Yitzhak, the son of Kahat. So Kahat's the son of Levi, one of Levi's three sons. So he's a cousin of Moshe and Aaron, yes. Moshe's father, Moshe and Aaron's father is Amram, who's also a son of Kahat. And Korach is the son of Yitzhar, who is a son of Kahat. So they are all cousins. And he is angry that Elitzaphan ben Uziel, he's another person who's also another cousin. And Korach is angry, why did Elitzaphan get the role of being the leader of the Kahatim and not him? So in other words, he's angry why one cousin has been preferred over another. And anyway, his father is the oldest of all the sons. So he should anyway, like in this hierarchical way of looking at things, where the oldest is best, unlike our modern view. So he is feeling jealous about this. And so because of that, he's rebelling against Moses for making these selections. So in one way, his anger is focused on Aaron. Why should Aaron be the high priest? I also want to be high priest. Or we're all high priests. Mm-hmm. No one is. No, Aaron's not better than anyone else. We're all the same. So there are different ways of reading it. But that it's a conflict both against Moses and against Aaron. But in this way of presenting it, it's particularly a conflict against Aaron, because Aaron represents chesed, kindness, because that's the quality of the kohuna, kindness. And Korach represents gevura, severity, which is the opposite of that. And kindness and severity are the right hand and the left hand. And in that sense, it becomes the waters above and the waters below. The waters below are severity, because they're yearning to reach above. And the waters above are kindness, because they flow downwards. So when it rains, it's really an expression of kindness. Gishmei bracha.
It's very interesting, because it's like this that's been flowing through Am Yisrael kind of forever, the way I would see that. Because, you know, then you have Hillel and Shammai, and then you have, you know, right and left, and, you know, through to modern state of Israel, we have, you know, Lehi, and then you have, you know, Haganah, and then
oh,
you,
if
you
we're going to put it into Israeli politics, it'll become very complicated.
When did he actually say this, Maiva? On night in the...
On Shabbat Parshat Korach, 1958. Which was long
in
before...
New York.
Yeah, it's Rebbe. No. Oh, you mean when did the previous Rebbe say it?
Yeah, when did the previous Rebbe say it?
He said it when he was released on the 12th of Tammuz. And that was, he was in Kastroma. He'd been sent to Kastroma, and then he was informed that he was released. So he said that moment then.
Amazing.
Yeah. You mean that he should be focused enough to say a discourse?
I just got out of prison after pumping Judaism. It's not the first thing he's going to do now I'm released. Unless I get back into Judaism. Because the whole reason why I just got put in jail is for spreading out Torah and spreading out mitzvahs and fulfilling everything what a Jew needs to be fulfilled with. And straight away, that day when he comes out of prison, it's a big day for him.
Absolutely.
He published the beautiful Deep Mimer.
Well, that's...
Where it helps not just him, also others.
You're quite right. I agree.
It's amazing.
I mean, to the previous Rebbe, all of this is like, and to the Rebbe, you know, all of these events in life are spiritual events, and Jewish teaching, Torah, is the center of existence, and when there's a threat, you know, so it's some kind of spiritual issue, and then when the threat is removed, so it means, thank God, you know, that means we can go forward even more. That's, so certainly it's a very beautiful thing that straight away on that day he said a discourse.
It's because of a writer's retreat. You retreat into some place to do something, and then what you have got nothing else to do. No wife, no kids, nothing. Sit there in prison with your books, because he had the protection enough to get the books.
He wrote an account of the imprisonment, which shows that it wasn't as relaxed as all that.
It was
very heavy. It was a continuous conflict, interrogations the whole time. He wouldn't cooperate with the interrogations. When they asked him how old he was, he refused to give his age. He gave an age, 100 and something. Which was like, if you add up all the Chabad Rebbeim before him, and then it like adds up to that. So it was a complete conflict the entire time, and which also generates spirituality.
That's very like Sharansky.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely. That's So here we have this sort of cosmic concept of the conflict of Korach and Aaron. Five lines up from the bottom of this paragraph, the mizem muvan, from which we can understand shahashaychud of itpela Korach l'rakia mavdil, the connection of Korach's conflict and division to the firmament dividing the waters. It's not only that the root of any kind of conflict comes from this firmament which divides. Now that's a fascinating idea. On the first day of creation there was light, let there be light. The second day of creation was, let there be a firmament dividing between the upper water and the lower water, and that firmament is seen as the source of all conflicts whatsoever. So if you're having an argument with the parking meter attendant and he says, God forbid, that one owes a lot of money to the Westminster borough of Westminster, and you say, no, I was only there 2 minutes. So the source of that conflict is in the firmament which was created on the second day of creation. Maybe you should tell that to the parking meter attendant.
Some of those African guys would probably agree with that. You know, they're really like Christian, and they probably know all that stuff.
Oh, well, in that case, well, then it's a very good idea.
Yeah, that's right. That's what
you imagine. As we learn in the Midrash, Lama Ein Ktiv B'Sheni Ki Tov. You know that on the second day of creation, Monday, it doesn't say God saw that it was good. And so to make up for that, on Tuesday it says Ki Tov twice. It says that he saw that it was good twice.
Yom Shlishi.
Yeah, Yom Shlishi, that's right. That's why we have the Shir on Tuesday, because Tuesday is such a special day. However, so it says in the Midrash, why doesn't it say Ki Tov, that it's good, on the second day of creation? Because Shabon Yevret Machloket, because conflict was created on that second day. As it says, Vayim Abdul Bein Maim Lemaim, that it should separate between water and water. Eile Shagam Machloket Zu Bafrat, but in fact, this Machloket in particular, the Machloket between Korach and Aaron, is similar to, and its source is, the Machloket of the firmament which divides. So in other words, all Machloket goes back to that firmament, but particularly the conflict of Korach and Aaron. The Kamosha HaMachloket, okay, over the page. Derekia Mavdil HaMachloket Smol B'Yamina, the same way that that conflict is like the conflict of left and right. Al Derech Zeh Machloket Korach V'Aaron, so it's the same in the conflict of Korach and Aaron, that Aaron is these line, the side of Chesed, Yamin, kindness on the right. Korach, who was a Levi, he has the quality of Gvura, severity on the left. So it's the difference between the Kohen, who represents kindness, and the Levi, who represents severity. V'yesh lehosef, now on Canaan, the Shnein Yanim Eile de'shabit pelag Korach. These two concepts in the division of Korach, which is A, Machloket in general, division in general, and the fact that he was arguing with Aaron in particular, those two, Shayachim Zelezeh, they relate to each other. The Hinyan Zeh Shebriyat Machloket, the idea that the creation of conflict, the firmament which separates, was on the second day, Dafka. Why was it on the second day? Ki Yom HaRishon Umidat HaChesed. The first day is the quality of kindness. Yamin, the right hand. The spreading of light. Yes, there's nothing, the light represents itself. Chesed, kindness. So there we have the first day. And then they have the second day, Yom HaSheni Umidat HaGvura, small. The second day is severity. The left. You see, the days of creation go in the order of the day, the attributes of the Sfirot. The 7 days of creation are like the 7 Sfirot, kindness, severity, etc., till we get to Malchut, fulfillment, which is Shabbat. So the second day of creation represents therefore the left. Once you have Gvura, once you have severity, you've got a possibility of conflict. In theory, from the point of view of chesed, of kindness, everything fits together, everything smooths over, no problem. But from the point of view of gvura, there is conflict. As we learn in the Zohar, there, yamina ish lema dekula. The right hand is the wholeness of everything. Beital yokol shlimu. On it, on the right hand, the quality of chesed, depends every kind of wholeness. But, kadita smola, ita machloket. When the left hand is aroused, then conflict is aroused. Va'alpiza yeshloman, according to this one, can suggest, she'ikin yano shel korach u'machloket, that the main quality of korach is conflict. Okay, let's miss out the brackets. V'zeh shecholak Aaron chesed, the fact that he was in conflict with Aaron, kindness. And what v'ratza la'asot ha'gvurot ikar. Now, this is an interesting thing. He wanted to make severity into the main thing, which is an idea which comes from Hasidic teachings, that's what he wanted to do. Not chesed should be the main thing, not kindness, but severity. In other words, not a flow downwards, but a flow upwards. Hopefully we'll see some kind of explanation of what this might be. Now, hu shal yedei zeh yeh chizuk l'machloket. The reason why he wanted gvura to be the main thing is because through that machloket would be strengthened. You see, there's the idea in the brackets we missed out, there's the idea of machazik b'machloket, to hold on to machloket. See, that's, one can have an argument with someone. There's this, Hasidic quip, that Hasidim varen in kas. Hasidim get angry, but the anger, it blows over. You know, like a little while later, they're saying l'chaim together, the anger's gone. But then there are others who are breugers. Now, breugers is a terrible thing. In Yiddish, breugers means a smoldering anger which goes on for years. it's the
what
two...
What's the shortage of breugers?
Breugers.
Kas.
Yeah. But it becomes a Yiddish word, breugers.
I know.
And as such, it's acquired the meaning of not the wild anger of kas. Kas, anger, you slap the person, you smash the thing on the floor, you're very angry, bang the door and breaking the window in the, Whereas breugers is much more quiet. It goes on a long time. That's, the two aunts who haven't spoken to each other for 20 years because of something or
other. That's why you say there's a breugers in the family.
That's right, yeah. That's ever. Exactly it. Yeah. You could do a Tsugazut. You could do a survey, different family, what's the breugers in your family, That's. And the thing about these breugers is that they don't they're not uttered usually. They just go on in this negative way. So that's
Korach definitely uttered it, didn't he?
Yeah. All right. So that's a limut zchut. So he wants to strengthen machloket, but tzarich lahavin. Now let's try and understand. The sages tell us, Hare Korach pikeach haya. Korach was clever. He gives here in note 17 a whole string of references, Tanchuma, Midrash Rabba, also quoted by Rashi. Korach was clever, not stupid. Umistaba loyma, and one could suggest, Shamachloket shulob, akunat aron, the conflict. The reason why he had this conflict against the priesthood of Aaron, you see, that's really the issue, the priesthood of Aaron. That's why it's focused on that. He made an error in the pathways of divine service. Now, this is a beautiful perspective of Hasidic thought. Why does anyone do anything wrong, when you're talking on the Tanakh level? It's always they want to serve God, but they've got the wrong way to serve God. So all kinds of situations are presented in spiritual terms. The reason for it is it's an error in service of God.
Who made the mistake, Aaron or Korach?
No, Korach.
Mitnei Korach ta'a bedarkei
avodah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which line are we on,
though? We are on. I'm sorry. It's where there's a little footnote 18 in the text. So that's 3, 6, 7, 8 lines up on page Bet.
Okay.
Yeah. 8 lines up in that middle paragraph.
Okay.
But Darchei Avodah has got a little footnote 18. Ve'ena muvan. And we can't understand. Lama ratza b'machloket? Why did he want a machloket? What's special about machloket? Dezeh shechalak al Aaron, the fact that he was in conflict with Aaron, efshel levay, you can explain that. Shekorach savah shavodat Hashem tzricha liyot bekav hagvura. Okay, this was his difference of view from Aaron. Aaron is the man of kindness, the Kohen, who believes that the main theme in service of God is chesed, kindness, coming from above down. Korach, on the contrary, he thought the main thing in service of God is on the side of severity. V'lachein chalak al Aaron, that's why he disagreed with Aaron, shahayta abodato b'kav chesed, whose service was on the line of chesed. See, when it says line, it's because you have the sfirot, like in three lines. There's the middle, then the right side is chesed, and the left side is gvura. So you've got, on the left side, bina, gvura, hod. That's the left side. So it uses the word kav. Kav means line. The line of gvura, or the line of chesed.
And the hod is the crown, isn't it? No, that's Keshet. That's
No, that's Keter.
Keter, yes.
No, hod is parallel, or is the equivalent of Netzach. Netzach's on the right, and hod is on the left. So Netzach is on the side of Chesed, the line of Chesed. The equivalent is Chochmah, Chesed, Netzach. That's on the side of Chesed. Now, but according to what we've just said, that the fact that Korach wanted to make the gvurot, gvura, into the main thing, is in order there should be a strengthening of the machloket. Why is this? We don't understand this. Hayeich hashav Korach shemachloket hiderech ba'avodat Hashem. How can it possibly be that Korach should think that conflict is a pathway in service of God? We can understand the difference between Gvura and Chesed. Aaron says Chesed, from above to below, that's the way to serve God. Korah says no, from below to above, that's the way to serve God. Okay, they've got a difference of opinion, we can understand. But how can you say that Machloket is good? That Machloket is a path in divine service? We also have to understand this Targum, Korach divided. And this idea that this division is like the firmament which divides. The Lechora. Gam shmo shel Korach atzmo chomez al chakiyah mavdil. The name Korach is a hint to a firmament. Because we have a fascinating pasuk that there is rakia ke'ein hakerach hanora. A firmament like the fearful ice. That's a pasuk in Ezekiel, in the image of the Merkava. A firmament like the ice. And ice is Kerach, and Kerach is the same letters as Korach. So his very name relates to the word firmament, Rakia, that we have elsewhere in Tanakh. That we have this, it's like a gzeira shava, it's like a hyperlink connection. That the word kerach, korach, connects with rakia. So it's, they come together. And then Yecheskel, you see them together. You see these two concepts together. So this idea, Korach himself represents this firmament. And so to try and understand what's this extra step that he is making a firmament, he is dividing. But Yuvanzer, okay, chapter 3, but Yuvanzer will understand this by considering the firmament which divides between water and water. Alright, now this is a very beautiful idea, the whole idea, what is this water? The mayim hen ta'anuk. Water means delight. Now this concept of water meaning delight, I first encountered because it says it in Tanya, in one of the, chapter 1 or chapter 2, it talks about the way in which there are four elements, fire, air, earth, and water. And water is the basis of pleasure, of ta'anuk, of delight. and uses the phrase Mayim Matzmichim Kol Minei Ta'anug. Water makes all kinds of delightful things grow. So the way that I imagine this to myself, you know, like you're walking somewhere and suddenly you spy a lake. So there's an immediate response. Hey, let's go and look at that lake. You know, the lake is immediately attractive. You know, what do you see by the lake? There are different fruits and there are different plants and there are animals. The animals are drawn to the lake. You know, there's something more. There's an enjoyment about the lake. So it is in ordinary, you know, the practical terms of going for a walk in the countryside or the park in our urban existence. Although this is, thank God, a city it's easy to escape from. there you have the idea of water representing ta'anug, delight in that sense, and also in a more general sense. Now, the fact that the reason why water makes all kinds of delightful things grow, which it says in Tanya in chapter 1, as it says over here, it's because in water itself there is kind of coalesced the concept of delight. It gives a reference to a very profound text by the Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, in Imre Bina.
Can I just ask you, when the tribes divided up Israel, wasn't he next to the water? Because there's something about Asher being full of delight or something like that.
Asher Shmeina Lachmo. Asher, his bread is shamen, is fat, is full of delight. But I can't remember where Asher is situated. Does anyone remember? Where's Asher?
In
which part of Israel? Don't remember.
Asher.
I've got a feeling it's near the sea. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Yisachar is near the sea. Zvulun, I mean. Zvulun is near the sea. Zvulun al Chof Yamim Yishkon. But I can't remember where Asher. Sorry. So, right. Now, so we have this idea that in water there is this concept of delight. V'harakia mavdil bein mayim elyonim. Now we're on page Gimel. Top of page Gimel. Yeah, nachon. V'harakia mavdil bein mayim elyonim l'mayim atachtonim. And the firmament which divides between the upper waters and the lower waters. He haparsa shal yada naset havdala bein atanugim binyan ruchaniyim. Binyanim ruchaniyim mayim elyonim. V'tanugei olam hazeh mayim tachtonim. There is a kind of division between the upper spiritual delights and the lower worldly delights. And so that's what this rakia, this firmament is. This firmament is the division between the upper spiritual delights and the lower physical delights. V'akavana b'rakia mavdil b'mayim elyonim l'mayim tachtonim. The purpose of this firmament dividing between the upper and lower water, upper and lower delight, it is in order, the reason for this firmament is in order that the lower water should reach higher, they should reach higher than they were before they descended. At the beginning all the water was together, then there's made a firmament in the middle, the lower water is below, and that is yearning to reach higher. And through that yearning, it will reach higher than it was at the very beginning. Dal yedei yeridatam lemata, through their descent below, nasa behemat shuk, vatzimaon la'alot lemala, they get a yearning and a thirst to rise to a higher level. Mayim tachtonim bochin, this is a beautiful phrase. I'm not quite sure where it's from. Yeah, it's from the Midrash. the lower water weeps. Anan be'inan le'mahavi kamei malka. We want to be before the king. In other words, when this division on Monday was made on the second day of creation, and the lower water is condemned to be far away from the spiritual realms above, the lower waters were weeping, and they said, we want to be before the king. Now, I'm not sure if that's the reason why the sea is salty, because tears are salty. But anyway, the saltiness of the sea, that like relates to this lower water weeping. And so therefore, whenever we eat and we have bread, we put salt on the table and we dip the bread in salt, because that's the representative of the lower waters, so that they should be on the sacred table, which is
the
like...
salt is the representative of the lower waters.
Yeah, yeah, the salt. And that's why the korbanot in the temple always had salt added. That's the representative of the lower waters.
Is that a Hasidic explanation?
I don't think so. Oh, thank you so much, Nicole. That's great. We're now going to see where Osher is. So where's Osher?
At the top.
Oh, you're right. Osher's along the coast, just north of Zvulun. Right.
The daughter said it was supposed to be where there were the grapes.
Mm. Uh-huh, okay.
Just below Zvulun.
No, place? above Zvulun. North of Zvulun. Towards Lebanon.
I thought it was on the north. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Nicole.
That's great.
So that's like Akko, is it?
No, it's just below Sidon.
Yeah.
It's not either anymore.
No, it looks almost like it's...
According to...
It's
to
just
today.
Under a different name.
Yeah, today's
that's what Ariel Sharon
thought as well. Atida Eretz.
It's the Beck of Valley as well.
Yeah, this is what I got as top score of something once upon a time. You know, the fashion prizes you used to get from the United Synagogue Girl.
Okay. Now the salt on the korbanot is not a Hasidic explanation. It's whether it's in the Talmud. I'm not the fact that salt's on the korbanot is a verse in the Torah. Whether that's because of the lower waters, I can't remember. Whether that's in the Talmud, the Midrash, or it's like a later Kabbalistic explanation, but I don't think it's specifically Hasidic. It's a Jewish explanation. The neshama should have an aliyah.
Amen. Thank you. Amen.
So that is the salt on the korbanot, and as a result, because in the book of Yechezkel it says, pointing at the altar in a vision that Yechezkel has around chapter 40, Zeh hashulchan asher lifnei Hashem. This is the table before God. So our table at home is like the altar. So the salt on our table, at our table when we eat, it relates to the salt on the korbanot, which is giving room to the mayim tachtonim.
So this explanation of the salt that you always remember the destruction of the temple, even Shabbat, and that's actually like a later explanation, probably.
I don't remember that explanation.
They always put salt on the bread.
Zecher l'mikdash, in memory of the temple. I haven't had that.
Oh, okay.
We dip in salt water at the Pesach Seder, representing our weeping for for Galut. Okay. But
the usual explanation is the one that you're saying now.
Yeah.
You never knew that, at all, did you? You didn't know it either.
I knew it, but
Eli knows
but taking this
and even more than that, Malka knows
you should use salt all over your food. Yes, everything.
Well, that might, dessert. But that might be bad for your heart.
Not using low salt.
Low sodium.
Hi. It's a beautiful explanation.
Well, it makes me feel more concerned to actually have salt. You know, halachically, Bye.
Bye.
All the best. Halachically, if you don't have salt, when you make hamotzi on the bread, we wouldn't do this on Shabbat, but on another day, you know, one can dip. If you have a salad with vinegar, you could dip in the vinegar just to make the taste on the bread. But because of this explanation about the salt, I prefer to be careful to actually have salt on the table. You know, and of course Shabbat, it's part of the whole thing of making hamotzi, dipping the bread in salt.
So which explanation? That because the salt
is from the Mayim Tachtonim.
From the Korbanot, or from the Mayim Tachtonim.
Yeah, the Mayim Tachtonim and the Korbanot.
Well, the Mayim Tachtonim don't have any relevance on Shabbat, except that it's the end of creation, and perhaps you say, at the end of creation, I want to remember the beginning.
Uh-huh. But no, the thing about the Mayim Tachtonim remain. Once they're divided, they remain as a factor in existence which is yearning to be close to Hashem. So by us having the salt on the table, we're allowing them to be close to Hashem. We're helping them. It's a kind of kindness from us to this painful part of existence that feels remote and wants to be close. And so by us having the salt on the table, we're helping it be close.
If that was the case, then why don't we dip it in salty water like in Pesach?
Well, every minhag has its definition.
And its variations.
Its variations and its limit. Yeah. All right. Val yedei zeh, and through this whole process, okay, this is 3-6 lines down, just after footnote number 24. Val yedei zeh, through this whole process that the lower waters have descended below, and they're yearning to be with the king, they actually, through this, hey mitalim lemaile yoter mikamosha ayu kodem yiridatam, they rise higher than they were before they sank lower. Ulemaile, now here's a striking statement. Ulemaile yoter gam mimayim elyonim, and even higher than the upper water. In other words, by the fact of them being cast down, they eventually reach higher than the upper waters. It's like the idea that the Baal Tshuva reaches a level, the Talmud says, b'mekom shebaalei tshuva omdim, the place where the repentant stands, ein tzadikim gemurim yecholim lamot, the complete tzadik is not able to stand. By the fact of him falling down into that lower level, he then is able to reach upwards, which gains, even rises higher than the one who never fell.
Or in other words, Machloket Korach is higher than the Chesed of Aaron.
Well, through the Machloket of Korach, something or other reaches higher than it would have been otherwise.
Higher than the chesed of Avraham, because that's the opposite of Aaron. Because that's the, if you're comparing Mayim Tachtonim with Mayim Elyonim.
All right, let's see how it spins out. You know, we'll bear that in mind.
Oh, you know something that I don't know.
No, we'll
coming along.
We'll see. We'll see how it comes out. V'zeh mash'am razal, and that is what the sages say. V'zeh shebiyom ha-shishi ne'emar shnei pa'amim. Should be shtei pa'amim. The fact that on the third day it says twice, ki tov hu echad l'melechet ha-mayim ve'echad l'melechto shel yom. One is for the work of the water of the previous day, and the other is for the work of today, the third day. Now, at first sight, Harei Melechet HaMayim Hu Inyan Shemachloket. The work of the water on the second day of creation is the whole idea of division. Ve'eich Ne'mal Zeh Kitov. How can you say that it's good in any way? How can we say that on the third day when it says Kitov twice, once it's one of the saying Kitov is for the sake of the second day. But the explanation is as follows. Shal yedei avodat adam, through the service of people, of man, na'aseh habiru v'aliyah d'mayim atachtonim, there is achieved the sifting and the elevating of the lower water. V'lachem b'yom ha'shishi, because then on the third day, when you have something special, k'shahaya, when you had the command, yikavu ha'mayim mitachat ha'shamayim al-mekom echad b'terayah ha'yabasha, you have the waters gathering together on the surface of the earth so that the dry land can be seen. The yabasha is mekomo shel adam, and the dry land is the place where man lives. Now, through that nishlama kavanah v'lechet hamayim, through that the actual intention of the whole division of the water was achieved. Shal yedei havdalat mayim atachtonim mimayim elyonim, through the separation of the lower water from the upper water. V'yiridatam lemata, and their descent below. They actually become higher eventually than they were previously, through the fact of in the Maim Tachtonim, in the sea, suddenly becoming another division, and from the sea emerges dry land, and then you have the possibility of human life, and so therefore the lower waters are involved in human life, which before, if they had just been part of the upper waters all mushed up together, they would never have been able to achieve. So therefore, there is a sense in which, through the process of division, and their weeping, and they're very upset, nonetheless comes to something much more exalted, that they're able to come closer to Hashem, because there you have humanity, and you have the Jewish people, and you have the temple in Jerusalem, and you have the connection with God, which transcends all these other spiritual levels. So that's the reason why that the work of the waters is itself good, even though it starts off with machloket. So in other words, we're being presented with an idea which might help us understand that machloket can be good, although it's still difficult to understand how can machloket be good. Why is it that Aunt Sally doesn't speak to Aunt Rosie for 20 years? What can be good in that? But nonetheless, somehow or other, through this process, at least looking at the days of creation.
Isn't there a machloket l'shem shamayim?
Yes, I was just going to ask that same question.
Interesting.
But this wasn't, was it?
Well, Korach's was not. But you could say that the machloket of the second day of creation was. It's God doing.
In fact, in
Pirkei
Avot, it specifically says what was not for the sake of heaven was Korach, and what was Chilul and Shammai.
Okay, section Dalad. Now we can understand why Korach wanted machloket. It's all part of his error in divine service. He thought that the intention is the reason why the waters, which are now called the lower waters, the reason why they're separated off from the upper water and they were cast down below, is because of the special positive quality which there is behatanugim hagashmiim atzman, in physical delights in their own, for their own sake. Now we're walking on very subtle and delicate ground here, because one of the aspects of Hasidism is that, in contradistinction to earlier Kabbalism, which rejected physicality, Hasidism says, you know what? The physical can be made itself into a vehicle to something spiritual, and so therefore, in a certain sense, they embrace physicality, unlike the earlier ascetic Kabbalists who were always fasting and somehow not able or less able in some ways to relate to the world as world. Now, so here we're dealing with some very subtle distinction the difference between Korach's approach and the ideal. Now Korach, he sees the tremendous significance that there is in physical pleasure in itself. Now, why is there a great spiritual significance in physical pleasure? Well, Kabbalistically, that's easy to prove. The shoresh hagashmiyot, because the source, the root of materiality, hu lemaila yoter mishem mishoresh haruchniyot, is actually higher than the source of spirituality. Now that's, you see, there's olam hatikun. The world of tikkun is the source of spiritual delights. Davening beautifully, learning Torah, ecstatic feelings on Yom Kippur. That's all olam hatikun, the world of tikkun. Higher than the world of tikkun is olam hatohu, the world of chaos. All this relates to the idea of shvirat hakelim, the breaking of the vessels. So the breaking of the vessels takes place on a very exalted level called the world of tohu, the world of chaos. After the breaking of the vessels, there's a kind of a reconstruction of the world.
The next one up.
Well, it's the next one down, actually. No, it's a reconstruction of the world.
The highest again was what? The highest?
Tohu, chaos. And so the pleasure that there is in physicality comes from the world of tohu, the world of chaos. That's why, that's the draw that the physical has, this destructive power that the physical can have, drawing a person along dangerous pathways and engulfing them in different ways. All that is the chaotic power, charismatic power of olam hator, the world of chaos. So seeing that the material and the physical have got this very exalted root, Korach says, wow, let's go for that physical thing. That's really where you're going to get the deepest level of spiritual connection. Don't worry about Torah study, praying, you know, Yom Kippur. Let's enjoy a nice glass of
whatever the honest type pleasure, almost, you're saying.
Well, he might do it in a more... Dionysus, it joins, you know, like quite a few different pleasures together. Mm. You know, it might be more respectable when we're looking at it from Korach's point of view. Mm. But it's... well, it's a very beautiful bracket, but let's leave it because it'll take another half hour. So, let's miss out the bracket. V'lechein ratza, and therefore Korach wanted shagvurot yiyu haikar. He wanted severity should be the main thing. Why? Ki zeh shemaim tachtonim bochin anen be'inen lemehevika meimalka. The reason why the lower waters weep and say we want to be before the king, is because they can feel the exaltedness of revelation, of chesed, of kindness, of the right side, the right hand. Since these spiritual revelations are basically in the upper worlds, Lachain Maima Tachtonim, therefore the lower waters which don't have these spiritual revelations, they want to leave their existence and ascend higher. That's the quality of Gvura, of going up. Aval Lefita Utoshal Korach, but according to the error that Korach made, Shahakavana Hibatanugima Gashmiim Dafka Atzma, that the divine purpose is the pleasure of the physical pleasures themselves, sheyitgale behem shoresh hagashmiyot, that in the physical pleasure itself should be revealed the source of all materiality, which is very exalted. So therefore, hari adaraba, on the contrary, ikah hamayla, therefore, he saw it, that the most important thing, hu batzim tumim vagvurot, is in the contractions, the concealment of the divine, the gvurot, the severity, shemehem itavim advarim agashmim, from which comes into being the lower physical things. Let's just try. I think we're going to have to need a diagram. to try to understand it.
Can I just ask, is vora and gever the same root?
Well, it is in the sense that gever means strong, and vora means might. So that's true, but that doesn't mean that vora is seen as a masculine quality. In fact, the opposite. Vora is a quality of the feminine.
Right.
Rather, the masculine is supposed to be chesed. In Jewish thought, man is seen as kindness, which I think is a general distinction between Eastern and Western.
I was thinking of it as masculine and feminine there.
Yeah.
Because for me, gever and gvora, if it's the same root, and gvora is conflict, it's like the male negating his feminine side, and therefore conflict. That's
certainly a way of analyzing human beings, and also from the Jewish point of view. I mean, there is this statement about ish darko lichbosh, the nature of a male is to conquer, you know, so you could see this gvura quality there. Although normally when looking at the sfirot, the male quality is one of movement down, and it's the female which is movement up. So bina, wisdom, understanding, which is on the left hand side of the sphera, is feminine. Whereas chokhmah, although it's also a feminine word, but it's seen as masculine. So which is on the right hand side of. Yes. And now let's just try to understand. You see, we've got the spiritual dimension. No, that's the thing. These markers, it's the wrong kind of marker. So this is the spiritual realm above, and then we have the material realm, or physical material realm. There's a shop in Camden Town, Material World, but they sell curtains. So, to spiritual people.
To block out the light.
Now, this is the source, you know, of the material, which is a very exalted source and therefore reaches higher. Now, the fact that the lower water, which is on this level of the material, it is being cast down into this lower position, makes it yearn. The lower water is yearning. It's yearning for spirituality. Right? The lower water feels cast down. And as I understand this, what Korach is saying is, look, you don't have to yearn for the spiritual, which only brings you to this level, the level of the spiritual. You in yourself, you're at the lower level of the material, your source is very exalted. Enjoy yourself as yourself. Don't have to worry about reaching for something higher. See, reaching for something higher, that's the normal, if you like,
drive, or
I was going to say like the Hasidic paradigm. You know, we're here in a physical world, and yes, we are part of the physical world, but nonetheless, there has to be a kind of a reaching for something higher, and that is part of what makes the whole thing tick. Whereas what Korach is saying in this discourse, is that you can enjoy the material in itself. Know that the material has a source which is much more exalted, comes from the world of chaos, a very upper level. And so therefore, just by enjoying the material in itself, you don't have to yearn for anything higher. Enjoy this world. And in that, what he's doing, he's dividing. That's how I understand it. I think that's what it's saying. He's making a division, because otherwise the lower waters are not really divided. They are yearning for the upper. So because they're yearning, that's a connection. And he's saying, forget about the yoni.
Just be yourself.
Yeah, be yourself. It's a certain kind of religious complacency.
Isn't that kind of the basis of hedonism and the honor, that's what I was asking you about.
Well, I'm not sure whether in this, in the image here, in this discourse, whether it's hedonism as much as a kind of religious self-satisfaction.
Mm.
Mm. That the person feels very complacent. I don't need to yearn for anything higher.
I think Margot would say.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a kind of, I'm thinking of it as a religious narcissism.
Mm.
Just, you know, enjoy, you know, Judaism is so beautiful, you can just enjoy it like that without any sense of longing.
Just the cake and the challah.
That's right.
Mm.
It's got terribly late. I don't know why. There's something wrong with your clock, Nicole.
Sorry, I'll push it back.
There is. It's 5 minutes late.
So let's on the contrary, he thinks that the main thing is the physicality in itself and in complacently enjoying the physicality in itself. Aval Korach Tabaze, last line on this page, but this was Korach's mistake. Kigilu hashorish to maima tachtonim gashmiim, the revelation of the root of these lower waters, atzmam, themselves, yiyeh la'atid lavo, it'll only be in the future, when Mashiach comes, or in the seventh millennium, something like that. Ubichdei shiyagilu hashorish to maima tachtonim atzmam, tzalich liot ben tchila hegesh to maila tachiluyim. In order for the lower waters to really achieve the spirituality that is there in their source, they first of all have to be in a process of yearning and thirsting and longing for that which is above. All right, now it really has got very late and we're going to have to stop. But basically, there are two positions in terms of the physical world. One is, Kol ma'asecha yih l'shem shemayim. All your actions should be for the sake of heaven. That means you're doing a physical thing, and you are involved with physicality, but at the same time, you are somehow seeing a spiritual dimension in this physical thing. So you're eating, or whatever it is, and you're aware that there is a spiritual dimension to this activity, and you try to make your focus that spiritual dimension. So in other words, that's like the lower water, which is yearning for the spiritual, and it's true it's involved with our physical world, and it's eating, or whatever it's, the activity it's doing, but it's trying to see the spiritual in that. That is what's presented here as a healthy position. A less healthy position, or not unhealthy position, is that of Korah. Korah says, look, the material in itself has got the greatest levels of spirituality. The Kabbalah tells us, just enjoy the material for its own sake. Now, there is a term for that as well. B'chol drachecha da'ehu. Know God in all your ways. So that means that by eating an apple or something very enjoyable, you're able to know God straight, neat. It's true that that is a style of service of God, but it's a very exalted style. It's for the future when Mashiach comes, or maybe it's for tzaddikim. It's not the, don't kid yourself, you know, for now. So Korach represents the division of the world that you do not have to worry about anything beyond. Whereas what Moshe and Aaron are trying to teach is, look, there's a material world, yeah, and we have to deal with it, but we deal with it through yearning for the spiritual. So in other words, while we have material things, the material thing is a vessel, is a channel for something spiritual. So you have a beautiful home with the help of God. The purpose of the beautiful home is to have a shir, studying Torah, bringing up children, chinuch, all the different dimension of sacred qualities, not just in the materiality itself. And this was Korach's problem. And so therefore, and the resolution of this problem is going higher is going to a higher level, and that's the miraculous level. It's coming to the miraculous level that one is able to resolve all these different dimensions of the spiritual, the material, and you come to a level where everything is able to be connected together in a healthy way, and that brings us to the miraculous release of the previous Rebbe on the 12th of Tammuz, and the transformation of the secularizing process of modernity, so that instead of modernity being a situation, who would have imagined, yeah, in 1927, not to mention thinking of the Holocaust and all the different things, the terrible things that were going to happen in the future, that at this time now, 2010, thank God, all over the world, there are people studying mystical, spiritual, Hasidic teachings in different ways, and experiencing the joy of Jewish life in all its holiness and its sense of yearning for the spiritual, and the wish that that spirituality should be revealed in the world as a whole with the coming of Mashiach now. And then the source of the material will be revealed. Then we'll be able to have B'chol drachecha da'eyu, know God in all your ways, and the apple will taste exquisite. Okay.